Coming up, actress Thora Birch joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Yep. Hi, it's Ileana Douglas. I was thinking of something funny. That's why I was late with my...
About what really happens behind the scenes in the
this
movie.
This is the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. Always thinking. I never stop thinking. If I stop thinking, I guess I'd be dead. It's Tamara Berg. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
What a wonderful day. I'm so thrilled to be here. I'm going to give a meaningless plug to... that's what I was thinking of.
Okay, go for it.
I'm just going to, in real time, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is getting so good.
Yeah.
And I was watching it last night, and I highly recommend that show, which is on Crackle and the great Jerry Seinfeld. And he's just doing such a service of just interviewing, you know, the great comedians of our time, especially, you know, some of the guys that don't get interviewed so much.
Right.
You know, what I think is very, very important. And just meaningless plug for that.
Absolutely.
But what's going on? Hollywood.
Well, we were talking about interviewing and the TCM. What is it called? The TCM Film Festival.
That's coming up. TCM Film Festival coming up. Just heavy heart with this week with Robert Osborne passing away, and he was just the kindest man, and obviously just so knowledgeable, made it look so easy. And I know from the first time when I met him and came on the show to talk about films with my grandfather to then, I remember the first time, you know, getting up there and hosting. And wow. I even stole his cadence. I just like watched him. And I thought I'm going to do everything the way he does, modulated, and like he's coming into your living room. Mm-hmm. And I would always, you know, one of the great things about the cruise was that we would have this downtime to actually hang out with him and talk mm-hmm. with him. And it was so great. I remember he was telling me an experience where, you know, because it was a challenge for me. It was, you know, you're interviewing three or four people in a day, just going. And he said to me about getting... you know, how each person's rhythm is very different. And I said, yeah, that's what it is. And then you're the last person's really funny. And then somebody else is very serious. And then jumping from that. And just that idea that he was always, you know, never had perfected the act of conversation. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, and as knowledgeable as he was. And
That was what he felt? He felt he never perfected?
Yeah. The idea that we were talking shop as if I were, a coworker, I just was very, you know, touched by that. And when he just was always... very, you know, always would stop and say hello to you. And other people have said this too. He made you feel like, you know, he was your friend because mm-hmm. he was your friend. And he just was really, really great and set the tone. I mean, I really think that the kind of the comeback of people starting to watch classic movies began with TCM and Robert Osborne. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, as I wrote about it again in my book, it was my constant companion when I was in... New York and always watching it. When I think of the great filmmakers, you know, Martin Scorsese, who had it 24 hours a day, had TCM on, mm-hmm. and so many people that I've met who have commented about, you know, being on TCM. It's just a beacon, and I think that really is because of Robert. And I know that Robert's starting to write books about film. Mm-hmm. Also really inspired me to write books about film. I had books of his, you know, in my library. I had his book on the Academy Awards in my library and got him to sign it and everything. Mm-hmm. So he just was... I feel as if he'll be missed, but in some ways, I feel like he made such an indelible mark on TCM that mm-hmm. I can't think of a festival without him. You know, that's what kind of a mark that he created. So God bless him. And he's up in heaven now with Lucy, I figure. She was a kind of a protege of his. So she'll, you know, he'll be up there having a nice gossip with Roddy McDowell and some other pals. But cheers to you, Robert.
Yeah.
Sweet soul.
Aw. He will be missed for sure.
And we have an incredible actress. It's hard to think of her as an actress, like little Thora.
Little baby Thora.
I know. She's a grown woman and a wonderful actress, Thora Birch, coming up. And,
yeah, well, let's just bring her in. Why don't we just bring her
in? I'm very excited. Of course, she's been in many movies, starting out as a child actress in Hocus Pocus, and then, of course, in the Academy Award-winning film American Beauty. She was nominated for a Golden Globe in Ghost World, just creating an unbelievable performance. And then other films such as Dark Corners, I want to see that, where you played an evil twin. And many other things. Welcome.
Hi, actress how Thora are Birch. You?
Now, we just saw
Wait, hold
each
on.
Other.
I like your headphones, oh, yeah. so I'm going to...
You put the headphones on. It makes you feel like a DJ.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure.
Now, I just saw you because we have the Criterion collection
coming out,
which is Ghost World, May 31st?
First, 30th or 31st, one of those, but at the end of May.
And I saw you. What was the last time we saw each other?
Oh, gosh.
Did you ever come to one of my music parties? I feel like, again, way back in the day, we exchanged Christmas cards.
Probably.
And stuff.
I remember we had a blast on set, and I think I ran into you a couple of times after that, here and there.
Yes.
But I can't, maybe a party or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's been a long time.
But I saw you, and I just thought, I don't want to embarrass you, but I was like, oh my God, you're stunning. You like great. You're beautiful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You look like a
vision
of...
You're too nice.
No, I'm not being nice. I was really like, I don't remember being that pretty. She's so pretty.
I look a little different without the glasses and the hair and the whole thing.
Yeah.
The Raptor t-shirt.
But going back to, and we're going to talk about your first movie, but again, like, how does it feel you know, I never had to transition because it's like by the time I was in, I just wormed my way into the movie business. But, you know, that is it, do you watch yourself from childhood on screen? I can't imagine how surreal that must be.
It's pretty bizarre. It's
do you feel like a woman yet?
I mean, my birthday is on Saturday.
Oh,
it is. 35. And to say that peculiar. Doesn't seem right to me
Thora,
at
you
all.
Look,
but
you literally look like you're 25.
It's just, well, thank you. I just,
that's crazy.
It's strange. I mean, I know, you know, that's a good question because I know one of the main questions on this show is what's the first film that you've seen?
Yeah.
And I was watching movies in the womb. Like, I think my parents would have to tell me what it was.
Yes.
They probably took me to go see, like, the original Superman or something.
Right.
I don't know. But I was one of those young kids who would grab onto a movie and watch it 109 times
in a row.
So I know all of the ones that I loved, but my most distinct memory of kind of falling in love with, let's say, the business was actually shooting my first commercial, which was for California. Oh. I'm sorry, what?
Oh, move closer to the mic.
Oh, it was for California Raisins, and it was just before the dancing, whatever that was. And the premise of the commercial was kids doing things for snacks, like the crazy stuff that they would do to get their hands on unhealthy snacks. And the raisins are healthy. And I just remember having the most amount of fun because they sat me down in front of this refrigerator with all of the contents spewed all on the floor. And I've just got this like raw hot dog in my hand and I'm dipping it in the peanut butter. I was having the time of my life.
Yeah.
And it was just this feeling of this is work. Sign me up.
Yes.
This is like, if this is called work, this is what I'm doing. So yeah, it's just, I think it's the excitement that
but did
always...
you watch movies on set? And then, I mean, growing up,
I watched pretty much everything. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I watched pretty much everything that I, except what I was in.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time to be able to, just watch a movie and be like, oh, it's just a movie. Grade it just as a film.
Right.
You know, you don't really, especially when you're working on one, you never really grade it correctly.
But
you know, because
old,
you've got no subjectivity.
How old were you when you did Hocus Pocus?
I was 10. I was 10 when we shot Hocus Pocus, and already that was...
You were jaded.
I had been... I was a little...
Oh, I was a sassy mouth
brat that knew everything under the sun and loved to curse, and I still feel that way.
That's so funny. Now, is that from your... Now, your parents were in the film industry, but this the part of the film industry that people don't as much talk about. Did you have any awareness of that?
No, I didn't know until older. Yeah, my parents were in the adult film industry briefly before I was born. And they were... Well, my mom was in The One.
The movie that everybody talks about.
Yeah, absolutely. She was in that, so that kind of... followed her around forever, and I didn't... Growing up, I didn't know that. I didn't have any awareness of any of that at all. Mm-hmm. I mean...
We had no internet.
No internet, but
so
also...
So how would you know?
Well, the story was that, oh, you know, she danced. Mm-hmm. She danced. And was a power... And she was actually a power lifter, and she had a whole bunch of trophies from weightlifting and dead... And anyway, so that was what... I didn't really have a concept of what my parents did. And then when I later I found out through people you know talking about them like oh yeah our parents are swingers from way back in the day and I was like whoa wait what hold on a second somebody fill me in I had no idea
well some of it was the era you know it's like yeah. wrote about my childhood of but you know the hippies it was like you know the commune I right. I saw it all and and my parents my mom sort of went along with everything but you know all the movies they'd go to see at the drive-in were like Andy Warhol trash and it was a sort of moment in filmmaking where things were you know I it maybe sounds like funny but they were trying to be artistic and
it's actually it was funny and it is true though that and you know now that I'm older obviously I've gotten clued in on some of the good stories
yeah.
but yeah the director of Deep Throat thought he was making a really that was his mission was just to make a good movie
yeah
that had a great cum shot in it obviously
yeah
so, yeah
and then were you upset that people told you because people my father was a crazy hippie and so you know I had the stigma where it was like I couldn't ride on the bus because it's like right. the bus was like you know about her yeah. father don't you
see you were lucky enough to live the reality and where I just got to fantasize about how cool that all must have been like you had my ideal childhood.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, because once I hit
wasn't that great.
Once
Read
I hit
book.
12, 13, no, I know.
No, I'm kidding.
You were pretty miserable
I'm
about
kidding,
it.
I'm kidding.
Poor thing.
It was
You're like,
fun.
I wanna be rich.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted though. I was like
I wanna
feel...
be clean and go to tea.
Well, you know, the joke about like they when you grow up you read all these self help books about, you know, you choose your parents, like all that stuff. And I really actually felt that way. I was like, I don't know what family I was supposed I don't know why. I guess I must right. have been selfless the day I chose to be in this crazy family.
Right. Yeah.
But to me, like, you were in the business, you know, you're in show business. Mm-hmm. Isn't that,
it's
you know.
It's true, yeah. I mean, honestly, my parents did a pretty good job of keeping me isolated from maybe, like, the underbelly
uh-huh.
growing up. And so I actually came out a little bit. When I hit around 16, 17, 18, I started realizing how flipping naive I actually really was.
Mm-hmm.
And then people just seemed like really surprised by my naivete because it didn't seem realistic to them at all. That, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was an odd mix of totally jaded and also just like, wait, you mean they lied to me?
Right.
If somebody said something bad about me? Why? You know? When? Who?
Does that create paranoia, though?
Oh,
I mean,
totally,
I know when
totally.
I was little, I had a lot of paranoia. Like, I'd walk in school, and I'd be like, even if they weren't, I'd be like, they're saying, you know, because sometimes people would say to me, like, you grew up in a nudist colony, right? And I was like, it was a commune, we had goats.
It was a commune.
Like,
exactly.
Okay,
right.
Yeah. That too.
Theoretically, technically that happened.
But then, as I grew up, I was like, oh, I did see some pretty crazy things.
Yeah.
So maybe they knew more than I
did. I think everybody has to go through that process of realizing what did the scars, and then you, like, oh, okay, and then you can get over it.
Right.
Because skin grows over scars.
So much of being a kid, I think, is just coping.
It's true.
You know, where you,
life is traumatic.
And it's... I tried to live my life as a movie. Now, getting me to the movie like Hocus Pocus, the Bette Midler's, and were there people that you were even though you were a child actress yourself, did you differentiate yourself, or did you think you were like just like a grown-up actress, or were there people that you emulated and looked up to?
Oh, sure. You get celebrity crushes. You know, there's always, there's like a list of the guys that you're eventually going to sleep with.
Oh, my God.
I didn't make half of it. I didn't make half of the names on my list.
Did you ever get to meet any of the people?
I
remember.
We put up with all of the things that we have to put up with coming with the business, and we're not going to complain because we're incredibly fortunate, blah, blah, blah.
I know.
Okay.
So
one thing that makes all of the other rough stuff worth it is when you get to meet or, oh, my God, work with one of your idols.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, thank you, Thora. No.
No, but I'm talking about like idols, right? Like you've got this guy's picture on your wall like for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. For me, I've been actually really lucky to work with a whole bunch of people like that that I looked up to, but the one was definitely Harrison Ford.
Oh.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, going into the audition for Patriot Games. I was 9, I think. Maybe when I was auditioning, I was 8. I don't know.
Incredible.
But I just remember, like, I'm a nervous mush ball. Like, I basically went, was like, will you tattoo your name on my arm? Like, and he was, he was there. And I just, like, every time I was working with him, it was a starstruck. I could not behave properly.
Did you call him? Did you have that moment where I'm going
to
call him Harrison?
To slip him my card so that I could maybe one day be his babysitter. Like, I was like, can I do anything for you? I'll take out your trash. Your wife never has to clean again.
That's but you have that one day where you're like, Harrison, like, do you practice it? You know, I would have that. Like,
so much respect for him, I didn't even ever say his name to his face.
I know. Like, when I worked with Kevin Costner, I don't think I ever, I was like, hey, I would never say, hey, Kevin.
Kev, right, exactly.
I just was like, well,
Harry. No,
you're doing a scene next to, you're like, well, if you, he'll just come in here.
Most embarrassing moment ever. We're doing this close up. And I had come back. I had like 2 days on Clear and Present Danger just to follow up my role. Mm-hmm. And we just had we were doing this two shot in the kitchen. And they say, you know, rolling and, you know, sound speed. And right before the director says action, I just like turned to Harrison and blurred out, like, I think I said like something like, I actually really liked What Eyes Beneath or something like that. I told him one of his movies that I loved. Love, love, love. And he's like, are you serious right now? And I'm like, yeah. My head turned red and I'm like, my head immediately went down. Action! Like, worst moment ever. Why did I say that then? It made no sense.
So when you were and did you have your own trailer? Did you have Guardians? Like, did you have that whole thing when you're on a film set and you have to go to school?
So child labor laws have come a long way from the days of Shirley Temple when they let you keep the kid in a box.
Oh my God. So you know about that.
Oh yeah. The Coogan laws and all of that. So anyway, basically, you know, California, you have to have a state representative and you're on the set at all times and a tutor. So even when you're working on set, you always have to do like 3.5 hours. And the amount of time that you're allowed to be on set changes with each age, right? So, like, at 7, you get, like, 4 hours.
I see.
And when you're 17, you get, like, 10.
Okay.
So, you know, and then once you... And then that's all over when you become an adult.
And how are those teachers?
So you're actually super... I don't remember.
Well, because I've been on so many movies.
It's a crapshoot. Some of them are really nice, and then some of them are a little weird. Yeah.
I always seem like, that seems like a pretty good gig.
You know, right, like, being a teacher, yeah.
Yeah, being a teacher on a movie set, you know, is like, that's sort of like, you know, it just seems like a sort of, from the ones that I've,
Yeah, the teacher, they're a little bit of a toss-up, but it's funny. How the schools react is what's hysterical, because they just pile on the work as if you're not doing anything.
Right.
But because you're not in school, they just wind up giving you extra assignments and this and that. I mean, you're learning, like, the kids in class didn't learn half that crap. I know they didn't.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was there, they weren't doing anything.
No, this is when I remember in school, like, the one thing you had to have was gym. So, but when you're this kind of school, so gym is not required.
No.
It's just Jim like is four not. Hours.
Yeah, thank God. That was the best part of it. I hated Jim anyway.
I hated Jim.
I don't like the sun. I'm kind of allergic. So,
yeah. So that seemed like a good thing to have.
That was nice. No Jim.
Did you get your driver's license here? Like, did you have that experience?
Oh,
what
yeah,
was that?
I did. Being a California kid, you definitely. Yeah. I got my learner's permit when I was 15. And I was able to get my own car.
Oh my God!
Exactly. So I was, and I
what
had been
plotting
this car. I was obsessing over the Mustangs for like 3 years. You know, when they first came out in like 95 or something, it was the first time they came out and had done a throwback retro look to the original style. And I totally fell in love. And then, so when I was able, I got a black convertible one, you know, GT, the V6. Oh, I was loving every second of it.
How did you drive that thing? I remember.
Really fucking fast.
Yeah. I remember trying to test drive. I was like, no, this is not. It looks pretty, but not. I'm going to go back to my Toyota.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little bit more practical now, but yeah. Those were the days.
And did you have boyfriends? Like, were you, because we were, when you're in the movies, you know, it's like you're, I mean, it's still that challenge of, you know, again, you're around grown up people all the time. Did you have like boyfriends your own age, or how did that work?
I was a little social, when it came to people my own age, I was a little socially awkward. Mm-hmm. I wasn't so great with them. And, I mean, I'm normal for a child actress like that, in that mm-hmm. sense, is that, you know, you would think, oh, it's people like us that get asked out the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite. Mm-hmm. You just don't get approached, you know? You don't. And you kind of, like, fumble and search for it and, like, try to initiate relationships. And, again, that was all pre-internet.
Right.
So it's just a different era, I think, the 90s, the 80s and 90s. It was different. But, yeah, for a while there, I was pretty socially awkward for a while. It took me a while to get over that.
Was it hard? Like, when you're doing a movie, you know, with Harrison Ford, and then the movie's over, and he's like, he's not your dad anymore.
You cry.
I would feel like that's a real letdown.
Oh, yeah. No, not even the promise of maybe eventually getting to bump into him or see him again, because he's flying or whatever he does. You develop, every time you make a film, you develop such a tight relationship with the crew, and definitely with your cast and your directors and producers. And then it just, you know, sometimes relationships last, but that's kind of rare. Usually they don't, you know, just people like move on and
no, it never gets easier. I always set aside time now afterwards, because I know it's going to be a grieving process. I'm going to be like, why am I so bummed out?
Yeah.
You know, but I also like the schedule of acting. I feel like I am the happiest when I'm on location. I have no cares. I'm in a hotel.
Sure.
And
my
only responsibility is like to get up in the morning and find a car.
Oh, absolutely. Traveling
sit in
for work is so much fun. You really, it's the
greatest.
Only time where I feel like I'm mildly participating in real life, because you know,
I totally,
you have to follow
relate.
A bus schedule to get the tram to, and you know, it's the only time where you're like in the practical real world, you know, apart from traffic.
I don't understand, that's a mystery to me, and I'm, you know, 20 years older than you. I can't figure out why the best part of me happens when I'm on location. I can sit and paint a picture and gather everyone to go singing, and you know, I'm the life of the party. And then it's like I come home and I'm like, I'm just home watching Turner
Netflix, Ben and Jerry's right now, let's go.
Yeah.
Exactly, it's true. And then it's also, I find like I learn a lot more about the cities. I know more about cities that I've never lived in, just because I'm there for like 3 weeks or a month or something.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, I know the end. I've got that down. Because you don't just want to sit in the hotel the whole time. I mean, sometimes if you're having a bad day, obviously.
Yeah.
But genuinely, you want to go explore, right? It really brings out the explorers in us, and I love to go people watch in different.
Do you have a favorite city? Mine is probably San Francisco.
Oh, how could you, can't go wrong with San Francisco.
Just working there has been a
yes.
Done a couple movies there, and Bodega Bay, and I did a movie there last summer, and it was like, oh, so great to
That's interesting. I
were you
shot,
there?
Yeah, I was there a little bit earlier than that. I was there around this time last year.
It's so funny.
Doing a film there, and it was the first time I'd actually worked. Usually, I'm just running up to go hang out just to have fun. I got more friends up there than I do down here because we love to bitch and moan about LA. But it was the first time I worked up there, and I was in heaven. I loved it. Oh, they did put me in the Fairmont though, and that was a little
scary.
Oh, have I got a story about the Fairmont?
Please tell it.
Do tell.
That hotel is huge, by the way.
It's massive. Yeah. And you know, I was in the part where you go down the long hallway and you see all the presidents who have stayed and this and that and all these old images and, you know, the image of the what it looked like before the fire and after the fire, because every building in San Francisco has to have a story about the fire.
Yeah. Which was after the earthquake.
So, I mean, I may or may not have been going downstairs to smoke a cigarette at around 3:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Might not have happened, might have happened.
Hypothetically.
If it had happened, then this definitely did happen. Come out the elevator, and I'm getting ready to walk down that long hall because the door to go outside is on the other end. So I start walking down, and I notice like a woman in a short dress is kind of like bending down to look for something, I guess. Mm-hmm. And a man is standing right there, you know, just like hanging out, waiting for her to find whatever it is that she's looking for. And I keep walking, and I'm walking. I'm like, that's weird. And I keep getting a little closer, and then it's pretty obvious that there is some filleting going on.
Okay.
And I'm like, all right. I don't think that they were a couple, but I won't get into it anymore, but I'm thinking just on the way she looked and the way he looked, and then they were both like, she actually stopped, turned around to see, did somebody just get off the elevator?
I think you're going to say, like, is that
Thora Birch? Oh my God, that's Thora Birch!
Saw me, and then went back to finish the job.
Well,
that's work dedication.
So suddenly, you're hypothetically smoking a cigarette was not... Which is probably all caught on camera these days. Are you a fan of... I'm a huge fan of, you know, Dateline and the murder shows and stuff.
Oh, me too. You know that.
So the one thing I know is like, well, at least when I go in the car and, you know, it's going to be...
Right. Everything's going to catch it on
TV. Filmed from multiple angles.
For a number of years, I would always scope out the building because, paranoia does come in, actually. And, you know, you find yourself, like, scoping, like, where's the camera? You want to know where the cameras are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I even went through a period where I was, like, checking my hotel rooms. You know, I was checking the vents in the bathroom and this. Sure. And, like, because you get, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, like, people make, but it really does happen. And
it does.
It is.
It really does.
You know. Yeah. But I also think part of it is because you're. I mean, and you've been filmed from when you're a young age, but, you know, you're filmed and you're filmed and you're filmed. And sometimes, like, again, it's like they're filming the inside of your soul. So it's like you leave and you do think, you know, there must be cameras, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think how you handle that is dependent upon your own vanity levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went through a period of having my vanity was like way up through the roof, and that was when I was the most paranoid about stuff like that. And when you let all of that go, like it's like, you know, sometimes I see people walking around and they've got the tape on their phone and they look at the tape over the camera on their computer. I'm like, dude, come on.
They already know what you look like.
It's
they've
over.
Already been
the
here.
Jig is up. Yeah. Like, who cares? They've seen me pick my nose. I can play with my own boob. I don't know.
Exactly.
They've seen everything. I don't care.
Speaking of the Fairmont San Francisco, have either of you been to the penthouse there?
A garden, right?
The rooftop garden.
And there's a penthouse there that, you know, it rents for something like $30,000 a night or something like that. I was really lucky to be able to go to a party there a couple of years ago. There's a scene in The Rock that's set in that suite. It's where... somebody gets a haircut, and there's a hole.
Okay.
It's amazing.
That's a famous suite.
Yeah.
That's like, isn't that the one with the green tile room?
Yes,
or something? Like
exactly. Where the billiards. And the library with this. It's so incredible. If you ever get a chance to go there.
Yeah, I've never actually stayed and visited people.
I can show you pictures. I have pictures.
I've visited people there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about American Beauty, which puts you on the scene. And what was your, how'd you audition for? Well, like, let's go back to the audition.
That casting process took forever.
Oh, God.
I was one of the first.
Hey, you read the script.
I read the script. And, so I've never encountered something quite like this. I'm sure it's happened, but I haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
This script was absolutely the hottest script ever, period. Mm-hmm. Everybody had read it. Everybody was wanted to talk to somebody who maybe was going to maybe hopefully be a gaffer on
right.
the
And this is a script by...
And that was how... The script was already that way. So I read it, and I had never... I hadn't encountered a script like it before, and I felt like I hadn't seen a movie... I felt like I had seen movies like this, but mm-hmm. they had stopped being made. And I was like, oh, wow, this is great. This mm-hmm. is, yeah, this is art. You know, this is what we're all here for. And I really responded. People, some people in my camp really wanted me to go out for Angela, for the role of Angela, because, you know, I was known as a blonde-headed kid, you mm-hmm. know, blue-eyed, all that. And I just did not like her. At mm-hmm. all. She was the type of chick that I would just never really hang out with in real right. life, you know? So I was completely averse to that. And Jane just really spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of identified with her.
Well, she's the more melancholy.
She was pretty messed up. She allowed me to act more miserable than I really was. Mm-hmm. And so that was good for a teenage girl to be able to do.
Teenage angst.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She really let me wallow in it. And then I continued in that vein with Enid. So that's where I was. A lot of acting going on.
But you auditioned for it. And did you have only once or...
No, so I had I was actually the first person that went on any meeting at all with Sam for any role. Mm-hmm. You know, Kevin wasn't cast, Annette wasn't cast, and so we had a meeting about just the role and the project in general mm-hmm. and his first time directing, all of that. Like 3 months went by, and then I did, you know, went in and read, put myself on tape, and then I came back and did it again, and then we had a screen test, and finally after the screen test, which was like 8 months later from when I had read the script. Yeah. It was like, I mean, talk about being on pins. And of course, at that point, this was the only thing that was important in my life at all.
Well.
Was finding out about this movie, if I was going to get it or not.
Yeah, it's life or death.
Right. So a year of that, practically. And then, you know, getting the word that it was a go for me. Mm-hmm. I, from that moment on, it was, you know, pretty close to the experience of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I can best it, but yeah, it was a wild ride. The set was not, you know, people said like, oh, you guys must have had so much. What was it like making that movie? You know, and usually the press questions are always, oh, did you have fun? Did you have fun? And it's hard to explain to somebody like, yeah, it was miserable the whole time. It was awesome. But that's what it felt like. It was incredible. And I learned just so much from Kevin and Annette. Like being in the same room with those guys, even in a rehearsal room, is joy. It's a real treat.
They must have really set the tone, you know, for acting and...
Totally. Actually, the material really did set the tone, though. I mean,
it was a
great script. It was really well written, and Alan was there a lot. And, you know, it was great to have him around and everything.
And did he ever give you any notes, or was it mainly Sam?
You went through Sam, you know. But he wasn't a note giver, but you could there was many discussions. Everybody was very open. It was the mm-hmm. first time I ever worked on a set where you heard so many personal stories about people's lives. And, like, people kind of really opened up.
Yeah.
And that was a new one for me. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of, at first, I was uncomfortable in the share space, but then I crawled out of my cave. So
how old were you when you were making American?
16.
I mean, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
Now, how quickly from the first moment, like who calls you, your agent or your manager says, Thora,
you got the
part.
Okay, another good story. So I'm
that's my favorite. It's literally, and how long does it last? Is my follow up because you're like, I can't do it.
No. I'll make it quick. They're like, okay. I have to get her out of the studio. She talks too much.
No.
So I'm doing this small TV movie called Night Ride Home, and waiting again. You know, I had mm-hmm. left the set to go do the screen test for American Beauty, and I came back, and at that time, there was a onset flirtation with somebody who was working on the crew, and we had been up all night talking, because that's what you do when you can't have sex, you just talk. Uh-huh. So we were like, I was
tell
up for
about
like
it.
10, yeah, 10 at night until like 4 in the morning, and I had to get up because I didn't get any sleep, and I had to get ready to go to work because I had an early call. So I finally hang up the phone with this guy who I'm basically just, like, messing with his head just on purpose. It's just, you know, mind games. Why not, right? And so I hang up the phone. And I'm like, thank God that call's over. And then the phone, like, 5 seconds, I'm brushing my teeth, 5 seconds goes by, and it was the phone in the bathroom right by the toilet. And I'm, like, brushing my teeth, okay, go to work. Phone rings again, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? We just got done talking. I'm like, I assume it's him calling him again. And he goes, and it's Sam on the line.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, Thora? Like, I'm like, who's it? You know, and he's like, are you all right? I'm like, who's this? And how do you have my number? He's like, it's Sam Mendes. And I'm like, oh, shit. Wow. And he goes, yeah, so I just wanted to call and let you know that, yeah, we love to have you come on board and play Jane. Yes.
Oh my God.
I was all about it. I was like, yeah.
So then you get the part, and then how quickly did you ever get scared? Because I always get scared. Like, it's elation and then total fear. They're going to find out I'm a phony and I don't know what I'm doing.
Abject terror. Oh yeah, sure. Totally. Totally. I was convinced that people were going to really see how dumb I was. That was one big fear. And also just, performance anxiety in regards to a couple of different scenes. Not, you know, I mean, obviously the nudity one was kind of a big, that was really scary. But just, yeah, hoping that, you know, you're not going to get drowned out, basically, by the wonderful people that you're working with. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, like I'm a fraud. Hopefully no one will find out what a fraud I am, please.
Yeah. Well, that's always, you know, that's always tough. So then you're working on the movie, and then had he said beforehand, like, you know, but you read the script and it's like, oh, not rocket science. I'm going to have to be naked now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was even a discussion during the auditioning period too. I guess I probably could have, I mean, in the law is if, you know, you get to the set and the day arrives and you don't really, at the end of the day, you don't really want to do that. You can always just say no. You can always change your mind. But I knew going into it that it was just one of those things that I was just going to have to suck it up and do. Because to me, it was not a sexual moment. It was, and it read true. And I could really relate to somebody behaving in that way in that moment. And it was about her vulnerability, really. And her feeling for the first time like somebody was actually paying attention to her.
Right.
Which I thought were, you know, that those were all things that made Jane an intriguing character to me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, yeah, there's no, I had qualms about it, but there was never a second where I was like, I don't know if I want to do it. I don't think it's right. Yeah. I always thought it was right.
I think there's a part of an actress's brain that compartmentalizes, you don't put it in the front of your brain like, oh, I'm going to be an actress, I'm going to have to be naked. But then it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, there's a lot of that, actually, huh?
It's like, it's true. It's happening again.
Right.
Trust me, you'll reach the age where they don't ask you. I'll be like, wow, they don't ask me anymore to be naked.
I just keep eating so they don't ask.
Now, you were a kid, so that may be a different thing, but when you do nude scenes, everything gets really quiet on the set. Like, there's a funeral or a trick.
There was nobody on the set. I didn't know where. No idea where anyone was. Well, because we were actually shooting in two different houses on a back lot.
Right.
Over at Warner back lot over there. Oh. And so the whole area around these two houses was tented in you know, the night shield. And I didn't even know where Video Village was. You know, I was just isolated in this room with the lights, and who knows where Connie and Sam was. I guess Sam was running the camera. But yeah, it was like a funeral.
Did you think that made it easier for you or more difficult that you were alone, essentially?
It was just I guess it helped. I guess it did help because it was so quiet and still. But also it did seem odd because it felt like you knew everyone was looking at you, know, like you still knew.
Well, there's that odd thing that as a woman you feel like you have to make everybody else feel as if it's no problem.
Totally, totally, you know? Totally, yeah.
and you're just a professional.
Right.
And this
oh, I got this. It's okay. It's
every
fine.
Day and,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it almost didn't happen because the studio had a knip shit and was like, no, it's just too difficult. It's too much. And then finally somebody was got a lawyer on the phone and like, dude, all they have to do is sign a paper like saying it's okay.
Right.
Like, just don't worry about it. Like, it's fine.
But then,
but there was, we actually kind of had to fight to keep it in.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what did you think when you saw it in the movie? Did it, were you like, was it again that?
I was mad because I thought I looked better in real life.
What?
And then I just looked all like soft and pudgy.
No.
Like a little aww. Cotton ball standing in front of a window with long brown hair. So, but I was like, oh, it's a good scene. It's great, you know, and it fit. I love the movie. I mean,
yeah,
I'm a huge fan of the film. So
it's an incredible film.
Yeah, it's just when I can't help but be like, oh, you know.
I think you're right, though. It represents a time in filmmaking where just really people were making great, great films, and then it's everything sort of splintered
a
little
bit. Well,
that
was a really good year, was it? We had a whole bunch of good movies. Like, wasn't, I think, Magnolia or...
yeah.
Also, I know that Fight Club was the other one that was mm-hmm. that was pretty... like, a lot of great movies that year.
Very dense.
Yeah.
And so then you get it. We got to spend some time, of course, talking about Ghost World.
Yes.
Then you go in for, I mean, Jesus, 1-2 punch, like Academy Award winner. And then you go into Ghost World. That's like a cult. That's more of a cult classic than.
I agree. That's true.
Than American Beauty.
Yeah. Well, American Beauty, you can't really call it cult, but definitely Ghost World found an audience that it held on to for a long time. And that's, I consider Ghost World an accidental success.
Completely.
Because when I first saw it, I was like, well, my career's over. It's a failure.
I can't believe you said that.
I was like, okay, I'm never working again.
Did you think that at the premiere, or do you remember where the premiere was?
At the premiere, yeah, it was the premiere. The premiere was at the Egyptian over there, yeah.
I dyed my hair.
At the premiere, I was just like, oh, God, I hope I can get into this dress. That was my thought on the
premiere.
That's
all you were thinking.
Yeah.
So how did you meet? Had you seen Terry Zwigoff as a director, and he had done the documentary Crumb. Had you seen that? I mean, you must have been, like, hot as a pistol after American Beauty.
There just wasn't any material after American Beauty.
God,
there
that was so frustrating.
There wasn't. Right after, yeah, that's what... Like, that really sucked. And then so when I read Ghost World, I latched onto it immediately because I'm like, well, first of all, it's the only thing out there.
Right.
And second of all, like, hello, I can't wait to say these lines.
Yeah.
This is totally how I feel. So it was, but again, that was a thing where, no, you should play Rebecca, you know, you're too attractive for Enid. We want Christina Ricci to do it and blah, blah, blah. So I had to, like, beg. Uh-huh. I had to show up with the haircut.
Wow.
And the sunglasses and the glasses. And, mm-hmm. like, you know, I dyed my hair black, which I already had my hair black anyway. But I cut it really short and just to show them, like, look, no, this is my, like, please, mm-hmm. please let me have my part.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. So that wasn't so much an auditioning process as a real convincing. I had to really...
Does Terry audition? I just talked to Terry on the phone.
Yeah,
so
I don't know if Terry... I mean, I know we read... Yeah, I love Terry.
You were part of the selling point on the phone. You know, he said he's got Thora Birch. American Beauty.
From American Beauty. Sounds him. He is funny. God, I laugh so hard being around him.
Oh, my
him.
God. The best.
Yes.
And so what... I mean, that I can't imagine a more different director from than...
Oh, totally. Night and day. I mean...
Terry's like,
I don't
know.
He's like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Put the camera where you want to put it.
But yet, it's fun. You know, he makes it seem like he doesn't really know what he's doing. But he knows exactly what he's doing.
I remember one day, Steve turns to me. And, you know, I think it was like Steve's second or third day working. And he goes... just me, or is he more concerned with what the extras are doing than what we're doing?
Yeah.
He's like, this is a kind of a tight shot, right? And I said, you know what, that's probably a good thing. He just, yeah, he's like that.
Yeah. He'll get it all.
Yeah.
in the
yeah.
And so when the so that's a great. And now let's talk about your look, because again, it's iconic. And again, does it freak you out all these years later at Cine Family? It's like all there's Enid. There goes another Enid.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it's interesting.
I love the look of Enid. That was great. Me and Mary Zofries.
Mary Zofries.
We took our cue from the Dan's graphic novel, mm-hmm. and we tried to make her wear his world, because mm-hmm. Enid in the graphic novel usually just wears like a kind of a pencil skirt and a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. That's just like what she's always wearing. And me and Mary wanted to spice it up a little bit,
right.
and go a little bit more into the kitsch.
Yeah.
You know, to highlight that she's already a little bit more like Seymour.
Right.
So, what's interesting is that now you can still kind of see people and you go, oh, there's an Enid. You know, like, oh, there's Enid. And it's a specific kind of look and type.
Yeah.
And it is very retro. You know, they're usually wearing the cherries for earrings and all that.
Like, the t-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, the Raptor t-shirt, which everybody always asks me, whatever happened to it? I'm like, I don't know.
It's probably in a costume bin somewhere. You never know.
Now, could be.
One of the things about Ghost World is you have this great comic timing. And were you aware of it? I mean, because again, your deadpan-ness that's what makes the movie.
She's pretty, she's pretty stoic.
But it's hard not to, you know, what you did that was so great was you didn't goose it. You didn't be like, I'm the cynical one. You know, you just had.
Just did it, yeah.
That deadpan quality, but underneath it, we saw your pain and stuff. I mean, so I'll let you talk and I won't talk about it.
No, it was, I just didn't play the comedy. I mean, a little bit, there were certain moments. Especially when in the beginning of the film, when she still had a little bit more exuberance and she's kind of more playful, mm-hmm. and those kind of moments, I just kind of threw in there to show more of an arc for her,
right?
Because when she starts off, she's just kind of flamboyant, and you know, it's like making when in the diner with Weird Al, she's just like, "Oh, this kid's like hilarious. What's wrong with this girl? Like, she's fine." And then as the story goes on, she becomes more disillusioned, and we follow her make that journey, and either become disillusioned with her or just don't know what to think really at the end of the day, which I always like films like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I one of my favorite parts of Ghost World was that the ending was so strange.
Yeah,
and
ambiguous.
It was left to interpretation.
Like, where does she go? But she always says she's
going
to go away. She says she's going to get on the bus and go away.
Yeah, she does say that, but then she does. But also, I think that there's a little bit of a larger metaphor in there, but I'll leave that for smarter minds than me.
Was it, when you were working, and again, this just could be my interpretation of watching it, but like, did you develop, I don't mean real feelings, but did you start to develop feelings for poor Steve Buscemi, or does it always...
Well, I was a huge fan of Steve's anyway.
Yeah, he's the greatest.
I couldn't wait to start working with Steve. I love Steve. I was so happy that he did that role. I couldn't kick her afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I just got myself, I indulged in that headspace and seeing the world through her eyes for so intensely that it kind of just stuck with me and became my personality for, I'd say, about a good year and a half, 2 years following that. It took a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll to get it out of me. Thank you.
Well, it seems like what Enid would do, you know. One of my favorite scenes, well, I have so many favorite scenes. And I think I told you that when I went on tour with my book with Alamo Drafthouse, the movie they chose from the canon was Ghost World, because that brought the most people out. And
Wow, that's cool.
God, it was crazy. And the movie has more resonance today, which I can't understand. It's just that alchemy. More people, it's now it's a comedy. Like, whereas before it was
just this depressing movie.
Yeah,
kind of two miserable teenagers that.
Yeah.
God, can't they just get some friends and get over it?
Right. Now it's like Rocky Horror Picture Show, where everyone yells out Blues Hammer and everybody knows, everybody knows every line. But one of my favorite scenes, because again, I just thought it was so relatable to like when I was a teenager, is when you're crying and your dad just like doesn't get it.
Doesn't know what to do or say, kind of helpless. Yeah, that was a lot of people really liked that moment. That moment was for me was pretty good. My moment that where I was like, how do I kind of struggled with it, but also I just felt like, well, just, you know, just tap into your own nonsense and just go with it, was the decision to get on the bus. Mm-hmm. That scene was, I don't think I've ever been so actually in the moment. Mm-hmm. I just totally felt lost and like I should kill myself and get out of town. Like,
do you think she never comes back? Like she just, she goes to another town?
I don't know. I mean, I have my own, what it means to me is a little bit darker. I don't know if she pulls through. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she pulls through.
That's interesting. I always was so shocked that there was no sequel to Ghost World. You know, I mean, Terry did the Art School Confidential. Yeah. But, and as I said, having seen the movie repeated, because they actually had a film of it. And they, you know, they always do the thing when you're on tour where they go, do you want to go out to dinner? And you're like, you know what, let me just watch the movie.
Exactly.
So it's like, I saw the movie. I saw the movie like 15 times. So I know every frame of the film now. But,
I mean, it's nice to think that maybe I could see her ultimately finding something super compassionate to do, like maybe actually becoming a school teacher for young children. I can kind of see her finding a way to abandon herself to her more sentimental side after she gets a little bit older. But what the conduit would be for that happening to her, I don't know.
I thought there was an interesting tie-in with Terry's real-life wife, who's younger, and Seymour. And, you know, he is kind of Seymour-ish.
Yeah, he is, yeah, a little
and
bit.
And so, it's you know, when I watch the movie, everything becomes, you
them,
know.
Them, right.
Yeah, it becomes a little bit of like, oh, but she should have, you know, maybe comes back and they end up getting together.
Oh, again. Really? I don't know about that. She might come back. She probably comes back for Rebecca. She's probably a lesbian.
Oh, you think?
She could be.
She and Rebecca?
She'd be an excellent lesbian.
Rebecca was like the girl in Election a little bit, you know, so sort of put together a little bit.
And Tracy Flick.
Yeah, yeah, she's got that Tracy Flick quality. When you guys were on the set, when I was sitting with you guys, like I have a recollection of us like sitting at picnic tables or something eating, and you guys were like so poised and you know, like being leads in the movie.
We talked so much crap about people all day long. That's all we did was just talk smack left and right.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we were.
Did I pass? Was I okay?
Unfortunately, you were probably a target. I'm sorry. But you know what? It was your character, not you.
I know.
It was your character, not you. It was your clothes that got the brunt of it. Yeah.
God bless Marie Zoffries. Because again, I was like, we just got to sell it to Terry. Of like the crazy, you know.
It was out there, man. When you first showed up on set, I was like, whoa, okay.
I know. My main goal was just to make people laugh. And when we
so
were
so successful.
With like the kid. Yeah.
I think I was jealous of you. I think in the back of my mind, I was like, this bitch is trying to stand me up.
Well, but that's good.
It was good. Yeah, I was like, because she's trying to show me up.
Because to me, that's what the teacher does.
It's true.
And I based it more on acting teachers I had, not on art teachers. But these people, you're like, does this person hate me? Like they're, or do they like me? Like they, you know, acting teachers would sort of build you up. And I would have I remember having a teacher that like, you know, told me I was great. And then one day, you know, would say, will you walk through your imaginary wall? So after that, I didn't believe anything you said. And I was like, screw you, you know, like I thought you liked me. So I wanted you to be on edge.
Oh, yeah. No, it worked really, really well.
Of, like, never knowing where I was going to come
from. You delivered
from.
So many.
But there was a part of me that just was like,
I was cracking
up. I want to make those kids laugh.
Yeah. No, I was dying on the inside for sure.
And so then that movie comes out. Oh, wait, one more technical thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, it sounded as if you were lowering your voice just a tad. Is that my imagination?
No, it was a little bit. I was trying to do this. I don't know what it was. I think I don't know. I was trying to do like, I was doing something. I was playing around with my voice a little bit. I remember that. And I think I was just going for like a steady kind of, I just wanted her to have a steady drone. Mm-hmm. You know, like how you hear some people talk and there are just no levels.
Yeah.
You know, they just have that one sound, that one level. And I kind of wanted, I wanted her to have that a little bit.
Well, you kept the tone, you know, as I said, repeatedly I've watched it. I've been so impressed. I can't believe that that you didn't get an Oscar nomination for that film, because that part is so grown up. And so there's so many nuances. And like I said, that keeping that tone and not ever falling into shtick.
Right.
And, you know, completely to the end, I mean, I really think is admirable, which is hard. You know, sometimes it's tough, again, working with somebody like Terry, because he laughs so much. And just
that's
with
true.
My own small part, it was hard. Like,
no, it was really difficult.
A couple times that I was like, all right, that was a little too shticky. Like, I gotta be a real person here.
I don't know. I never got that from you. No, I just felt like I was so in her headspace at that point. You know? I mean, the success of American Beauty while we were shooting Ghost World was really out there. And it was great for me to hide away from that into the role.
Mm-hmm.
Because I probably didn't deal with it very well anyway. So to be able to delve into her headspace and just go inside yourself and really, you know, all that introversion and everything, it just was a nice escape for me. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said, I did get stuck there for a while and I had to like fight out of it. So
the movie ends, and then I do have to mention poor sweet Brad Renfro.
Oh, yeah,
rest in peace, because he just was
so sweet.
He was a sweetheart. And it was nice for me again just to watch the movie again and again and just be like, it's so tragic, but you know, the beauty of films is like they're there on film and they're captured, and we don't have people's.
Well, one good thing I'm glad is that they're at least putting his additional scenes on the Criterion DVD, so that's nice, because he did actually do some really nice work on it.
Oh, wonderful!
His character had a little bit more to it than when you just watch the film now as it was originally released. But no, you can see what a actual sweetheart he really kind of was, and. Mm-hmm. He had this ability to, you know, put on a bravado and act like all tough hillbilly boy and all that. But it was all.
Well, he was a child actor too, so it just is, you know.
He had a really rough time.
Just transitioning.
Yeah.
Afterwards. So lovely Brad. But so after Ghost World comes out, and again, just is like in the spotlight, all sorts of.
Yeah, I was shocked. I really was shocked by the success of it. I mean, I remember we took the film to the Seattle International Film Festival, mm-hmm. and I just quickly went up there one day for the screening, flew back down, and like as I'm leaving the airport in L.A., they call me, and they're like, oh, can you come back today and like get your award? I'm like, what award? What are you talking about? And they're like, you just won Best Actress! And I'm like, oh, great, I never even heard of the Seattle Film Festival, but awesome! I was like really happy that, you know, it was starting to get attention, and then with the critical acclaim of the film itself, it really kind of just took off from there. And hey, made killing DVDs.
Oh my God. It's the longevity of the film. And so then after Ghost World, you know, so what you said, like you became her for a while.
Yeah. I got stuck in her worldview, and I continued to behave like her in a certain way, and was not the friendliest person
mm-hmm.
for a while. And that hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know, to some extent. And also, just I was really struggling to find roles that I liked. Mm-hmm. And I kept looking.
Well, you know, you talk about an interesting. I always talk about the trajectory of independent film, which stopped after Ghost World. You know, that's when things sort of became problematic.
Well, it was so weird the way indie film became just as commercial as any other thing.
Right.
And to a large extent, it still is that way. But there's still more of an opportunity in independent to explore at least better stories and things that fulfill the role of what I believe the mission of films should be. And they are tutorials.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. I think now more than ever, they should be treated as such. I think once upon a time, they were just escapism in the sense that we could worship idols that we could see, and the gods returned, and it was a beautiful thing. But now, because there's so much out there and there's so many different outlets, streaming and the explosion of like the era for storytelling right now, it really is in TV. But I think films still serve that purpose to show us what is right and what is wrong and what is honest and what's false. And also to treat each other better. And so many films that get a lot of attention, I think that they come really close to fulfilling at least half of those.
Right.
And then they kind of fall off, or they, you know, it gets the message gets lost.
Well, after Ghost World, I mean, did people want, I mean, what was the struggle? Was the struggle that you didn't want to be Enid, or that people wanted you to be that person, or you wanted to do something different?
I was looking for something different. I was very much in headspace of, oh, okay, well, now I've got these opportunities, so let's explore those opportunities. I wanted to do a legal drama. I wanted to do horror. I wanted to go into politics. But I was, you know, it's like I still looked like I was in high school, and it just, all the things that I wanted to do just weren't really there, or I didn't fit into them yet. And I'm still an odd duck like that. It's still, you know, thing for me is can be shockingly difficult to find.
Well, it's a transition. You know what I mean? It's because it was such an indelible character, and you know what I mean? Like that's what I think is tough.
Yeah.
And
well, for a long time in the early aughties and all that, they're just, females weren't characters. I don't think we were just labels. You know, girlfriend, wife, whatever.
But you were still so, I mean, again, coming off of Ghost World.
It's better now. It's better now for younger actresses.
But definitely,
it's a lot better now.
But again, so coming off that, and so what are some of the things, not your sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but when you took like a, you know, a sort of a self-imposed break, did you travel? Like, what was the best part of?
Well, I kept working for a little bit after that. You know, I was in my search for the types of films, I started doing more and more indie, and I did do my horror, two of them actually. And then, I did my little things here and there. And then after a while, I did actually make a decision to be like, you know what, this is just not working out so much. I'll just take a break. And I went and I got my degree. You know, I hadn't gone to college out of high school because of my work schedule and everything. And so I took a break. I got my online degree in legal studies. I thought I was going to become a lawyer. And then I realized, like, well, yeah, but if you're good at your job, that means you're getting nothing accomplished. So what's, you know, I don't think trial is for me. So it came back to, what do you want to do with your life? Like, you know, you've lived, you've grown up, you're a woman now. So what is it? Come on. You tell us, Laura. And I was like, damn it, I just want to tell stories. So I wrote a play and I wrote a screenplay. And, you know, and last year was a good year work-wise for me. I did four films kind of back to back, so that was nice. The two that I'm super excited to see are The Etruscan Smile with Brian Cox and Above Suspicion with Emilia Clarke and Jack Huston. So those I'm super, super excited for.
I want to talk about those two, the upcoming ones. I want to talk a little bit about, because you did my fantasy is, I always wanted to do twins in a movie. I always wanted to be. And so you got to do, I can't, that seems so hard, especially on low budget.
So Dark Corners, which was a film, it was a very small indie that we shot in London for like £10.
Right.
And it was a really, the script was really tricky, and it was kind of back and forth, and so it's the real world and the dream world.
Right.
And in one world, I'm a, you know, young bride that's trying to get pregnant, and you know, that's her only concern is get this, you know, let's get pregnant. So she goes to see a sleep therapist because she starts having nightmares, and she starts having nightmares that she is this other woman, and she looks completely different, and she's constantly victimized and like sought after and is like being raped in her sleep and is kind of living in a hellish otherworldly existence. And so it goes back and forth between the dream world and the real world leading up to her eventual murder. And that's, you know, the story is all about that. So it was, that was a blast because, in one day, you know, you've got the short blonde bob and everything's pink and pastel and frilly. And then 15 minutes later, you know, you're practically dressed as a dominatrix. You're like, your hair's down to your ass. Right. You know, you've got a completely different facial thing going on.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean,
Would you do another horror movie?
I don't know.
It's almost like you can only do one.
You know, I mean, yeah. Would I do like a Pan's Labyrinth type thing or something like that? Sure. You know, who wouldn't want to do something like that? But as far as like the real gritty kind of slasher ones, I don't think so.
I could do it.
I'm good.
I can't in my list of many things. I don't want to work in water.
Oh,
no, I'm serious.
Really? No water. No water working. You must have a bad experience.
I don't want to be wet. I don't. I worked on a mountain, you know, and we were in constant snow, and it was 30 below.
I saw the photo in here. Yeah. I didn't get to that chapter, but I saw the photo.
And it was really hard, but I could do it. I mean, mm-hmm. We flew to the set in a helicopter. It was rough.
I've done that.
But it was rough.
Yeah.
But it was a real adventure, but I got offered a water movie, you know, I couldn't do it.
No.
I was like, I don't want to be, and I can't, I it sounds funny, mm-hmm. I can't work with rats. I couldn't.
I think that's a good sound policy.
I agree.
It was like one of these zombie things, and I was going to have rats on me, and I was like, no. I can't do it. And they were like, they tell you, they're like, but they're pet, they're trained. I'm like, no, I don't care, it's a rat.
It's still rats.
It's true.
I
had a pet mouse in All I Want for Christmas, and that little shit was constantly peeing on my hand, like little droplets, little rodent pee. And it was weird. Mm. And they have a smell. So yeah, I'm with you on the no rodent policy. Yeah.
What about you? Have such an old world face. Like you, when I look at you, you look like you're from the 1920s.
Thanks.
You do.
I wish I was.
But like, you should be in a flapper movie or.
I've always wanted to do period. That's the one thing.
I can't believe you're.
I never made it into that for some reason.
I think again.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, but well, because of the Ghost World thing, it was so, you know, I think he just created such an indelible thing. But I think that, you know, like that kind of a period film would be.
I'd love to do 30s. I think that would be great.
You'd be incredible.
I would love to do something like that.
So you did these four movies. I mean, I hate to use this terrible, like, is this your comeback? Like, you're going to have 80 comebacks. As I said, you look like you're.
It's comeback number two. I guess. Hopefully. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if I don't work at all this year, then what am I going to do? No, it was a blip.
Yeah.
No, I am just more, you know, I've got my screenplay that I am developing, and I do want to direct that, and that's coming along well.
Great.
But for now, it's kind of a little bit back to the daily grindstone of actorly living. So I should probably go back to doing yoga.
To keep you grounded.
Yeah, sure, that's why.
Do you stay in touch with director? I mean, do you ever, you know, like I
wish. I was dumb. I should have taken numbers. I should have, like, I was too cool for that. I was just assumed, like, oh, well, in 3 years when I run into him next time, like, it'll be fine. But
I know, but everybody does that.
I never made, yeah, and so I should have been, like, just... Should have been taking numbers the whole time. But
you were driving your Mustang.
I was busy working on my list. Yes.
So you don't stay in touch with them. You're writing this screenplay. Have you thought about writing a book at all? It's hard.
I realize how difficult. I would love to. I just don't know if I would. I could start off with the. I'd probably have to go into fiction or something like that. Maybe start with short stories.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a little bit of sense. Or actually, maybe I have to stick with screen.
You know, listen, you can always write something. I just, after the experience of writing a book, I just think everybody...
Should try to write a book.
Should write
that
a book.
Writes,
because
write a book.
I was shocked at the amount of things that actually...
You're a writer. You've written a book. I will not allow myself to be called a writer until I've actually written a book. That sold online for like $7.99 or something. Then I'll be a writer. Not yet.
If you've put things in a, you know, a, script? Or what, did you do any improv on Ghost World? I'm sure you improv.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, some things, movements and choreography, were some of that was improv. Some improv was in some of the stuff, like I said, the earlier scenes where she seemed a little bit more vivacious and just kind of like, you know, poking fun. But a lot of the lines in Ghost World were right there on the page. Like, you didn't have to make up a lot of that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
It was a stellar. To me, that movie is the number one thing is casting. The casting.
Mm. Yeah.
Every part, even if the person.
Right.
Had
no,
like
it's
one
true.
Line.
It's true.
Was just hysterical and funny.
Right. Which I that's Terry. That's, you know, that's his attention to detail that, yeah. you know, nobody notices that he's actually engaging in.
Yeah. You should petition Terry to, like me. You can be.
Absolutely.
It's like, what are you.
Terry, get your butt out there and start making stuff.
I know.
That's true.
Put me in it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then briefly, because we don't have much more time, but tell mm-hmm. me about these movies that you just did that are coming out, and when are they coming out, and how can people see them?
Okay, so The Etruscan Smile and Above Suspicion will probably be out in the summer, I assume. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly around what time, but I assume sometime in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that's a true story of, but the only FBI agent who has ever acquitted for murder. I mean, not acquitted, sorry. convicted mm-hmm. of murder. Not that they don't murder, obviously.
Wow.
But the only one who actually was charged and convicted for murder. And he murdered his one of his star witnesses. And so Jack Houston plays the FBI agent, and Emilia Clarke is the victim. Mm-hmm. And I'm her older sister, who's mm-hmm. kind of more of like a mother figure to her, and is kind of watching as her life, watching in horror as her sister's life is falling apart. So that's a fun one. And that actually got me back with Philip Noyce, who directed mm-hmm. Patriot Games and Clearing Present Danger. So it was fun to see the difference in him working, you know, the differences of between working with a director as a 10-year-old and working as an adult.
That's always a great, you know, I was 10. Lay back, Philip. Yeah. I was 10. Yeah. I'm a grown up now.
And his style's changed a lot.
Really?
His style. Maybe, yeah. His
yeah. How many years have you been? It's so funny because you're still so young, but how many years have you been in the business?
30 years was last year, God. So 31 years.
That's crazy. And what is the other film?
The other one is The Etruscan Smile with Brian Cox, J.J. Feld, and Rosanna Arquette. And that's a lovely European-style mm-hmm. family drama for older audiences. It's about a man who lives in the middle of nowhere in Scotland, played by Brian Cox, and he's sick. And to seek help, he journeys all the way to San Francisco, but the reality is he's going to fix relations with his family, and I'm the wife of his son, and we have a newborn, and he's a curmudgeon, and he falls in love with the child and no one else. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh, that's it. Well, that's going to be so interesting. And then the Criterion's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for all the
sure. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what everybody else remembers or doesn't remember, or what people say about everybody else. I love all that.
I think it's going to be a big splash. As I said, I had the preview because when I toured at like...
I would love to do a screening and panel with all of us to just get us all together to do one at some point. That would be fun.
Yeah, I would love that too, just because it's so nice the way that the fans...
Then I could see Steve again.
Yeah.
Because he lives in... Like, he never leaves New York, ever.
See you grown up. Well, anyway, well, thanks so much. Anything else you want to add? Just a thrill to
No, thank you for having me and thank you for the book, which is really good, by the way. Really, really yes,
oh, well,
please write
you.
Another one.
I will. The next one's going to be, you know, the dark, all the dark crazy.
The tell-all. I love it.
Can't
I'll
wait.
Be in that one.
Can't
No, you're
I'm
in,
kidding.
Well, I did. That's the chapter, the wig years.
The wig years.
Every movie, I was like, why are you in a wig in this film? But
man, those things itch, don't they?
They're hard. They're really hard.
Hard to commit
Hour
to
eight
a wig.
Is the worst.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah. But Terry, I had him fooled. He actually thought that was my hair.
I thought it was your hair, too.
I know.
At first. And
I
then
did,
you said, like, no, it's a wig.
I did that crazy thing where I actually went to an event in the wig.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
Yeah. I went to the Crystal Awards with the wig. You know, and I bought the wig on, like, Hollywood Boulevard.
Right.
But, you know, when you're young, you're like, I don't care. So I was like, I'm going to go out with a wig. And if anybody knows, and it'll seem like. I had this idea that you needed to be in the wig. Like, you needed to make the public believe it was your hair.
Yeah, that it's not a wig. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I
do. That's funny.
The ghost
wig rolls.
The wig rolls. Thorbridge.
You can find Thora on Twitter at 1107miss, and her website is thora.org. Thank you, Thora.
Thank you, guys.
And you can buy Ileana's book in bookstores and online.
Yes.
It's called I Blame Dennis Hopper. You should get it. You should read it.
Yep.
Also, check out our website, ileanaspodcast.com, and our Facebook page.
Yes, and as I always say, everyone's life is a movie. Your life is certainly a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and this is sadly the end of our show, but please come back
anytime.
You're
so
here.
Much. Appreciate it.
Anytime you're here.
Best title of a book ever, by the way.
Yes, I know. I Blame Dennis Hopper. The great. Did you ever get to meet him?
I did. Oh. Yeah, briefly, a couple of times. Yeah, he was. I was another one where I was like too scared to actually go up because I was a huge Easy Rider fan.
He's amazing. Who's the coolest person you ever met? It's like is Harrison Ford your like coolest?
I mean, he's the biggest. He for me, he was the you know the one. I've met some incredible. Incredible people, though.
I know.
But you know who I really want to meet?
Who?
Jeffrey Toobin.
Really?
I really want to meet Jeffrey Toobin. That would make my day.
Okay.
All right.
Jeffrey Toobin.
Jeffrey Toobin, come on. You got a fan. Find
her. Okay, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks. Everybody. Thank you, Thora.
That's so funny. Yeah.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.